to see one of my employees in a grocery store after we weren't able to keep him working would be pretty tough.
The bleak economic future of the last sizable timber mill in Southeast. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, in light of the Russian doping scandal, Alaskan Olympians maintain the high ground.
I think we just have the kind of culture that frowns upon doping and looks at it as a pretty negative aspect of sport in general.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of operations in Alaska. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
A Canadian power company has refiled its application to finish its acquisition of Juno's power company. Alaska Congressman Don Young has written to express his concern. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
The latest filing has already attracted at least two critical comments. One of them is from Congressman Don Young. The Republican representative wants assurances that the Snettisham Hydro Complex doesn't pass into foreign ownership. It was built by the federal government in the 1970s and supplies the lion's share of Juneau's electricity. Snettisham is owned by the state, but its upkeep is the responsibility of Juneau-based Alaska Electric Light and Power. Under a 1998 agreement, AELNP buys all the power Snettisham produces. It also has an option to purchase the hydroelectric complex at any time. That option could pass to Hydro One once it completes its takeover of AELNP's parent corporation, Avista of Spokane. Young wrote that he doesn't oppose the acquisition, but wants assurances that the hydro complex will remain in the hands of the state or local owners. And he hinted at congressional action if those assurances aren't made. Young's office declined further comment. State regulators rejected Hydro One's previous application on a technicality. That filing received more than 30 comments, most of them critical of the deal. The Juneau Assembly is watching the process closely. Earlier this year, it openly floated the idea of making a bid for the power company, but Hydro One says AELNP is not for sale. The latest filing with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska reopens the public comment period through December 21st. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Congressman Young will be one of the negotiators on the committee that drafts the final tax bill. Young was one of nine Republican House members named Monday to the Tax Bill Conference Committee. That's the panel designed to hash out the differences between the House and Senate bills. In a statement, Young said he would do everything in his power to ensure that opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling is part of the final version. The bill the Senate passed would open the refuge. It's not in the House bill. The Senate is expected to name its conference members this week, and Senator Lisa Murkowski, as chair of the Energy Committee, will likely be among them. The bill itself would lower taxes for corporations and many families. In the Senate bill, the corporate tax breaks are permanent, while those for households would expire in 2025. The Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation says the Senate bill would add $1 trillion to the deficit. Congressman Young is now the longest-serving member of Congress, or he will be shortly. Representative John Conyers announced this morning he's retiring as of today. So Young inherits the symbolic title of Dean of the House of Representatives. That gives him one ceremonial role, swearing in the Speaker of the House. Young is 84 years old. He's been in office since March of 1973, predating any other current member, House or Senate. In the spring, the last sizable mill in Alaska considered turning off the saws for good. Viking Lumber cuts large trees like Sitka spruce and yellow cedar. It buys most of those old-growth trees from timber sales in the Tongass National Forest. But those sales could become a thing of the past. As Elizabeth Jenkins reports, with the mill's future undecided, a small town is contemplating a big change.
The timber industry in Southeast Alaska is a shadow of its former self. But looking around the lumberyard at Viking, you wouldn't know it. The ground trembles with heavy machinery. In the distance, you can see rows of old-growth trees stacked nearly two stories high. Logs are funneled into a warehouse, where a saw the size of a hot tub slices through the tree's bark and rounded sides. The mill produces around 8 truckloads of lumber a day. It's barged and then shipped to 40 states to be turned into door frames, crown molding, and soundboards for pianos.
You try to stay in what you know and you do it well.
That's Bryce Dahlstrom, one of the owners. His family has operated the mill for the past 20 years. But today, he says he would be reluctant to pass it on to his son.
If he would have showed interest in the sawmill, I think I would have discouraged it. Just because it doesn't look like there's a future here a lot of times. To be a logger anymore is frowned upon.
Back in the 1980s, the timber industry in Southeast Alaska was booming, and families like Dahlstrom saw the state as a land of opportunity. In the Northwest, tensions were ratcheting up between loggers and environmentalists. Dahlstrom grew up going to the pro-logging rallies with his parents in Washington State. And he says farther north, the prospects looked better.
Alaska, at the time, had pulp mills, a big timber industry. Things looked really good here. And shortly thereafter was when things took a dive here.
Viking Lumber bids on regional timber sales to supply the mill. And most of the sales are from the Tongass National Forest. In the past, the U.S. Forest Service has allowed large-scale industrial logging in the Tongass, damaging salmon streams and deer habitat. And that's led to tighter environmental regulations through the years, which has meant less of the Tongass is available for harvest. Dahlstrom says there have been fewer timber sales, too.
And we fought, and there's been a lot of times, since the late 90s, that it was that if we didn't get that next timber sale, we weren't going to have any wood.
Then last year, the Forest Service made a monumental decision. It would move away from selling old-growth trees in the Tongass altogether, phasing it out entirely after 15 years. Dahlstrom says it looked like the plan would finish off the mill for good. And his employees have come up to him with concerns, worried about the future.
You know, they just bought a house and they just bought a new car and they, you know, just got married or they got a baby on the way and, you know, they're like, what are we going to do?
There is one option. The Forest Service can still sell young growth trees. But Dahlstrom says those trees are much different than the tight-grained, high-value wood they process at Viking. He says the markets just aren't there. A short drive down the road from Viking Lumber is the largest community on Prince of Wales Island.
So this is old downtown here. This is what used to be the center of Craig.
Craig is a community of about 1,200 people. My tour guide is Dennis Watson, the city's former mayor of more than 20 years. In his white van, we pass lodges that cater to sport fishermen in the summer. Watson says the community was bustling with loggers when he arrived here a few decades ago. For a while, he worked at the mill. But today, the economy has shifted mostly to commercial fishing. That's what Watson does. Even so, he says logging still plays an important role.
If you took timber away from this place right now, the impact on this town would be huge.
Only 40 people work at Viking Lumber. But the mill is the local electric utility's biggest year-round customer and offers some of the few jobs available in the off-season. Watson says he's traveled to Washington, D.C. to try to explain that to federal agencies. But on those trips, he walks away feeling ignored. He hopes President Donald Trump can turn things around.
Like everybody else, I just roll my eyes at some of the things he does, but I couldn't have voted for Hillary Clinton. You know, somebody had a gun at my head. And I thought that if Clinton was elected, they would continue on the path that they had been going, you know, and we would just be pushed aside and, you know, our communities just start drying up here in Southeast Alaska.
Still, not everyone in town thinks there's a timber industry worth saving here. Bob Kloss has lived on the island for decades. He's also a member of a conservation group that's argued for more environmental protections in the Tongass. Kloss says he knows loggers who have successfully transitioned to a new job in Craig. And he thinks the town can survive just fine without Viking Lumber.
I think the logging era is over in Southeast Alaska. And, you know, nowhere else in the national forest system do people even contemplate logging old growth. And I think this is it's a huge mistake to be logging the last bits of it on the Tongass.
But Bryce Dahlstrom, the owner of Viking Lumber, says in the past year, he started to think the mill may have a future on Prince of Wales Island. A federal watchdog agency recently decided Congress will have the chance to weigh in. Cutting old-growth trees could still be on the table in the Tongass National Forest. Still, Dahlstrom's not exactly optimistic about the future. And he says if his community is going to turn into a tourist town, he doesn't plan on sticking around.
I guess to see one of my employees in a grocery store after we weren't able to keep him working would be pretty tough.
Dahlstrom says no one wants to be on watch when the last big sawmill in the state shuts down. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Craig.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a quantum leap for internet connectivity in the North Slope.
It's a pretty phenomenal capacity, really unlimited for the purposes of the communities that we will be connecting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
A 5-year-old Anchorage boy has died after finding a gun and shooting himself. Anchorage police say Christian Johnson died today. Police shortly before 12:30 a.m. took a call on the shooting at a home in East Anchorage. Police say the boy found a gun inside the drawer of a bedroom nightstand. The case has been referred to the Anchorage District Attorney's Office for possible charges. Police warn residents not to leave guns where they are easily accessible and to use gun locks. Russia has been banned from the upcoming Winter Olympics in South Korea. The International Olympic Committee made the announcement at a news conference earlier today.
The Russian Olympic Committee is suspended with immediate effect.
Thomas Bach is the president of the IOC. The ban is based on a report that shows long-term manipulation of anti-doping efforts in Russia, included during the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi.
The report clearly lays out an unprecedented attack on the integrity of the Olympic Games and sports.
WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, is leading the effort against that attack. Earlier this year, WADA and the IOC laid out the evidence of widespread doping in Russia, evidence that Rosie Brennan has spoken out against.
I'm the cross-country athlete rep for U.S. Ski and Snowboard.
Brennan skis professionally for Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage. Brennan says she's happy the IOC came to this decision, that the committee supports clean and healthy athletes. 6 Russian cross-country skiers were found guilty of doping during the 2014 Olympics in Sochi, 2 of whom have been stripped of their medals. Brennan says there's no tolerance for doping on the American team.
We are held to a pretty high moral standard, and our coaches have been pretty supportive against doping, and so I think we just have the kind of culture that frowns upon doping and looks at it as a pretty negative aspect of sport in general.
So far, Sadie Bjornsson is the only Alaskan qualified for the upcoming Olympics. In a written statement, Bjornsson said it's her dream to win an Olympic medal, and she's worked hard to do that in a clean and healthy way. She says she's thankful the IOC has the same expectations for the athletes she'll be competing against at the upcoming Winter Olympics. Mercury gets into ecosystems by a variety of means, human and naturally caused. National Park Service and the United States Geological Survey are among those studying mercury levels in resident lake fish in southwest Alaska. KDLG's Avery Lill has more on what they've found in recent years.
Methylmercury is a neurotoxin. It's a form of the element mercury, and the important thing to understand for this story is that most mercury in fish, more than 95%, is methylmercury. It's present in some lakes in southwest Alaska, and it can build up in fish that live there year-round. That mercury can make its way up the food chain, into birds, people, and other animals that eat those fish. In 2005, the National Park Service began monitoring mercury levels in non-migratory lake fish in Katmai National Park and Preserve and the Lake Clark National Park and Preserve. Krista Bartz is an aquatic ecologist with the MPS Southwest Alaska Network Inventory and Monitoring Program.
And since then, we've collected around 400 fish samples representing 9 species from 20 lakes. And we've found that fillets from long-lived top predator species like lake trout and northern pike can have elevated concentrations of mercury. The concentrations are higher in some lakes than in others, and they tend to increase with fish age.
The amount of mercury in lakes varies widely throughout the parks. Researchers observed the highest concentrations in lake trout in Lake Brooks at Katmai National Park and Preserve, more than double the limit the state recommends for children and women of childbearing age. The lowest in concentration in lake trout was in Lake Clark National Park and Preserve's Turquoise Lake. Those were well below the state's recommended limit. It's something researchers are looking into because in high enough levels, mercury can cause a host of physical problems for vertebrates, including neurological and reproductive issues. There are several ways mercury can get into an ecosystem. Industrial processes can release it into the atmosphere, and it can settle continents away. It can also enter a system naturally through volcano vapor, melting glaciers, and latent reservoirs of atmospherically deposited mercury. Bartz said the difference in mercury levels between all these lakes in a relatively small area is a good clue as to how mercury got into them.
If the thing that was driving the variation among lakes was something caused by the atmospheric deposition of mercury from coal burning in another continent, then I don't think that we would see this strong variation at the scale that we're seeing it. However, if that variation is caused more by like bedrock geology or surficial geology, like something going on in the soils, then you might expect to see these regional localized hotspots of mercury. So I think it could be at this point, it's just a natural cause.
Bartz said that there is still plenty of research to be done. Soil analysis could shed more light on the way mercury travels through these ecosystems. She anticipates that the MPS will publish results from the past 3 years of study on resident lakefish in Katmai and Lake Clark in 2018. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Four groups, including an Alaskan Native tribe, are suing the federal government over mining exploration permits granted near a major Southeast Alaska Salmon River and Bald Eagle Preserve. The Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan and three environmental groups on Monday sued the U.S. Bureau of Land Management over permits awarded to Constantine Metal Resources Limited above the Chilkat River. The Canadian company is spending millions exploring for copper, zinc, gold, and silver, and has said it's too early to determine whether a mine will be built. But tribal president Kimberly Strong says hard rock mining is a threat to salmon and the sustainability of her community. The lawsuit says the BLM should review the consequences of a mine, not simply the effects of exploration, before awarding exploration permits.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Residents of five North Slope communities will soon have access to much faster internet connections now that Anchorage-based Quintillion has activated its new fiber optic cable network. Company officials say the Alaska system is the first part of a network that could eventually stretch from Europe to Asia, with Alaska at the midpoint. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Quintillion activated its 1,200-mile terrestrial fiber-optic cable system on Friday, giving residents of five North Slope communities a quantum leap forward in broadband internet access.
It's a pretty phenomenal capacity really unlimited for the purposes of the communities that we will be connecting.
Quintillion spokeswoman Christina Woolston says Nome, Kotzebue, Point Hope, Wainwright, and Utqiagvik, formerly known as Barrow, all will soon have access to the internet through the system. She says its overall capacity is 30 terabits per second, which to us users could perhaps be best described in terms of the number of high-def movies that could be downloaded through it. Quickly.
Millions of high-definition movies downloaded in a second.
Woolston says the communities each will have access to up to 200 gigabytes of data per second. That's many times faster than the satellite-based system that North Slope Internet service providers have been using for the past several years.
Based upon the demand and the need, that could increase. Certainly the capacity on the system overall is there.
And it'll be much more dependable than the slow and often bulky connections that satellite-based systems afford. According to the head of ASTAC, the North Slope's biggest internet service provider.
So instead of going 23,000 miles into outer space to a satellite and then 23,000 miles back to an Earth station and then hand off, you know, in Anchorage to the internet connection, it's now happening, you know, at the speed of light over this fiber.
ASTAC CEO Jens Lipenex says that'll cut the time it takes to transmit data from a server to a computer, the so-called latency, by more than 90%, down from 900 milliseconds to about 60 milliseconds.
So that means things load faster, your web pages are more responsive, your videos don't buffer or skip. The overall quality of the bandwidth is vastly superior.
Lipenex says ASTAC's been laying fiber to the homes of all of its 1,100 internet customers in the five communities over the past couple of years and making other system upgrades in preparation of the Quintillion fiber becoming operational. He says the customers have been looking forward to this day even more than the company's workers.
We've been taking pre-orders now for a few weeks. So Wednesday, December 13th is kind of our go-live date for our new product.
Lipenex says ASTAC is now studying how to extend its system farther eastward to other North Slope communities that are still stuck with satellite-based internet connections.
We're turning our sights on extending the network from these new Quintillion landing sites to the final four, as we refer to them, which are the village of Koktovik, Atkasuk, south of Barrow, Point Lay, and Anaktuvik Pass.
Woolston says the Alaska terrestrial system links into larger internet lines that originate in the Pacific Northwest and that land at several points in south-central Alaska and the Kenai. Quintillion officials plan to lay another 10,000 miles of subsea fiber optic cable from the landing in Nome westward to Tokyo and from Prudhoe Bay eastward to London. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
When a young person commits a minor offense for the first time, like vandalism or petty theft, they sometimes have a choice. They can either be charged by the standard juvenile justice system, or they can go to youth court. There are 9 different youth court programs around the state. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman learned how the programs work.
In many Alaska youth courts, teens serve as defense attorneys, prosecutors, and judges. Palmer High School freshman Grant Wood says the idea is simple.
Giving people, good people who have done bad things, a second chance. A chance to do some community work service hours and learn that what they did is wrong, but still be a successful person.
During the closed, confidential hearings, teen prosecutors, like Wood, lay out the facts of the defendant's crimes, just like in adult courts. Wood says he's wanted to be a prosecutor since he was 12.
I believe it to be part of the prosecutor's role to keep the community safe.
Then come the defense attorneys, who explain that the offender shouldn't be judged just by one action. That's the role Janae Wilson played before she became a judge.
The defense side is more about showing the judges who the defendant is outside of the incident that has taken place, that they are not just a shoplifting case. They are somebody who has family and maybe they have struggles or they're stressed out or they're just a normal person who has hobbies just like everybody else in that courtroom.
In Mat-Su, 3 judges discuss and make a ruling. The sentence often includes community service, writing an apology letter, or writing an essay about the effects of their actions. The idea is restorative justice, Don't ostracize and punish someone for a crime. Instead, work to reintegrate them into the community and help all parties heal. Because oftentimes, the alternative is the Mat-Su Youth Facility.
They usually write up the charging documents there. We'll take the cuffs off. They usually sit right there in the chair.
Sean Tynan with the Department of Juvenile Justice leads the youth court volunteers through the booking area, then shows them the tiny cells where the young people are housed.
It's really hard to grasp my head around it, about how they live like this every single day.
Wasilla High School senior Kylie Harrell is one of the presiding judges at Mat-Su Youth Court. It's her first time at a youth detention facility.
It seems like it's very cold because everything is steel and it's like metal. And like their little stool is just all metal that they get to sit on. And their toilet is not very great. They get sheets and stuff, but their mattress is all plastic and their pillow is plastic. And it's not very nice.
As a presiding judge, she tries to help young people realize the effects of their actions before they end up at a place like this. But it's unclear how well youth courts actually do that nationwide. Though the programs are prolific, there are more than 1,000, studies evaluating them have shown inconclusive results. Some programs reduce recidivism, others don't. Some defendants end up serving on the court. Others feel shamed by the process. A study done by the Urban Institute in 2002 on the Anchorage program did demonstrate a reduction in recidivism. The researchers say one reason may be that young people play all of the roles in the Anchorage program. Some youth courts have adults deciding sentences. Teen attorney turned judge Wilson says they offer positive peer support to the defendants.
My job isn't to be the aggressor and to throw what you did back in your face, that I'm a teenager just like you, and that could have been me in that seat, and that we just don't want you to see you in the courtroom again because we want you to do good things with your life.
Wilson says serving on the court has helped her understand her peers better. They face challenges she may never understand, but youth court gives them the chance to approach those challenges differently. From the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Elizabeth Jenkins in Craig, Emily Russell and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Avery Lill in Dillingham, and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. Education scholarships and grants for ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, are available. To learn where the possibilities this education can take you, visit beanengineeralaska.com. This community message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil. Energy lives here. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.